ಸಹನಾಭವತು ಸಹನೌ ಭುನಕ್ತು ಸಹ ವೀರ್ಯಂ ಕರವಾವಹೈ ತೇಜಸ್ವಿನಾಪತಿತಮಸ್ತು ಮಾ ವಿದ್ವಿಷಾವಹೈ ಓಂ ಶಾಂತಿ ಶಾಂತಿ ಶಾಂತಿ.
I want to start the Tattva Bodha this morning, but only we'll only do the prayer verse, which is here. And I think I'll say a few words about the teaching methodology that we want to be using. How many people here are studying Sanskrit? A few of you are studying Sanskrit. How many know like the transliteration of Sanskrit? A little bit. Okay. A little bit. Okay. I'm going to be spending time on the Sanskrit that is there in each verse and unfold the verse. It's not mandatory for anyone to study Sanskrit. But if you're teaching, it's very helpful to know the alphabet, know how to read, have a basic understanding of it. It's very helpful for you as a teacher. And I'm viewing this 3 months as a teacher training course, which was true for all of the 3-year courses. They were all teacher training courses, even though not everybody taught. That's not the point. It's that the point is that for students who may find themselves teaching or wanting to have that satsang. So in the end, you kind of have to create, unless you're with your Swamiji or with your Sangha, you are the satsang. Where you go, there's a satsang because you're there, unless there's another teacher there. You know. And so it's helpful to have proper pronunciation, to have some familiarity, to have a basic Vedanta vocabulary, because the words that we use in English don't really, they are already loaded with other meanings. And so it's really helpful to become familiar with the vocabulary that we use and with all of the terminologies and all of this, and be able to pronounce it properly. Like I can hear you doing, those of you who are doing the puja knowing that chanting is so beautiful. If you've been with Swamiji, Vagishananda, your pronunciation will be so nice, so beautiful. And I hear that that it is, actually. So, for those of you who have no interest in it, you just have to be patient. And I think you'll gain some scars for another time when you may want to study it or not. But you can get a basic understanding of it, and those people that are studying it can actually get much more practice in reading, being able to actually read the text in the Sanskrit, to be able to read the Devanagari script, all of that. So I'm going to be using a lot of Sanskrit, and I will translate it. But I'm not going to hold back on the use of Sanskrit. Just know that it will be translated. And sometimes you don't know that it's being translated because you don't know the Sanskrit, right? So you don't know, is she translating that or not? That'll translate it. And you'll pick up this vocabulary. When we do the Tattva Bodha, really what it is a very beginning text that in a very systematic, orderly way, goes through all of the major terms that we use, the concepts, the things that are unfolded. And so we'll have that here in the Sanskrit and all of the unfoldment that goes with that. And so most of the verses and the terms that you use here, you just if somebody's teaching Tattva Bodha in India, they'll be quoting this right and left. These terms, because these are the terms that are being used and the phrases that are being used aren't just Tattva Bodha, the person who wrote this text, whoever that may be, wrote it pulling all of this fundamental information together. And so that for the teachers, it's even though I very rarely teach Tattva Bodha because I don't always like to go in this very systematic way, but I've been taught Tattva Bodha several times by Swamiji. Right? So you end up using everything that is in here. I also suggest for he's picked you and he loves you so much. Yeah. Just cuddle up there. Just cuddle up there. You look so happy. Okay. So
love bite. Excuse me.
So you'll have your actually have your books this afternoon. The book of books just like this. This happens to be. Yeah. This one is Sky's book. So you have your book this afternoon. What we're going to do is that if you come a little bit early to class, and maybe I come 5 minutes late to class, from the beginning, every day you'll chant from the beginning until pretty soon you're chanting the whole thing. So you'll be chanting it over and over and over. And for those who are interested in this particular type of study, I would memorize this book. Put it by heart so that you know all of these terms like that, and you don't have to, when you're teaching, you don't have to try to remember this or that because you use them all the time. And they have to just become yours. And so that's why we decided to teach this first, because it really covers all of the fundamentals. And of course, no matter even if you've been studying for 10 years, every different year that you hear this text or these so-called beginning texts, you get so much more out of it because you're learning it in your mind is holding a bigger context to really understand the purport of these verses. So that's what we're doing. The next text that we've decided on is Panchadashi chapter 1, which also is just a very detailed vision text. It goes into more, it's more of a teaching text than this one. It's by, Vidyaranya. So many of you have already taken, done some Panchadashi, maybe been taught chapter 7 or chapter 10. Chapter 1, 7, 10, and 15 are the chapters that are often taught. But I want to do this beginning chapter to see how he unfolds the basic vision that you have all of that. In the Sanskrit, it's a little bit more difficult, but we're going to continue to just plow through. Okay for everybody? Mm-hmm. It'll be Sanskrit and vision. So don't be afraid. Just be open to absorbing that, because we want, in our Sangha, we don't want to stray from the Sampradaya. Sampradaya means the teaching methodology that's been handed down. Every part of it, the pujas, the chanting, the bhajans, the Sanskrit texts, the being able to wield the pramana, to wield the upanishads and these prakarana granthas, these explanatory texts, to wield them as a pramana. That's our tradition. Or there's many other traditions that have kind of given up all of the tradition and then we're just telling what it means in English. And that probably has some sort of use too, where you just speak in English and forget about the Vedic tradition. You're just passing on this knowledge in your own culture, in your own language. There's that also. But that's not our tradition. Our tradition is of bringing forward this Sampradaya as it was taught to us. One of the things Swamiji said very shortly before he had his Nanda Samadhi, he said to me, I was just standing there by his bed, and he said, he was kind of in an emotional state. And he said, who's going to maintain the Sampradaya? Who will maintain the Sampradaya? And he said, Swamiji, you have many students, many of your students who are teachers in their own right now, will maintain that sampradaya. And in so many words, he said, we have to maintain the sampradaya. And he was concerned about it. Then when I said, many of your students, Swamiji, are doing that. And he said, who? And so I thought, what do you mean, who? So I listed off a number, you know, like Swami Paramarthananda and Swami Viditatmananda and Swami Tattva Vidananda. And there's many, and I said, Swamiji, there's many that I don't know, and there's those of us in the West also who are also doing that. You know? And then he went. And I gave Swamiji a little Vedanta and I said, so he needs some Vedanta. Bhagavan will take care of it, Swamiji. You've done everything that you could possibly do. I said, you've done everything that you could possibly do. Nobody could do more. You know, now Bhagavan has to take care of it. Yeah. So, what? He's so wonderful, so. He knew, right? Yeah. He just nodded. Yeah. But it's funny, you know, when you're in that kind of a so physically so very, very weak, those things that are kind of your concerns, you know, rise up. And Swamiji, you know, he didn't mind if he had a concern with this. He didn't care at all. He was just totally himself. Even at that time, he was having a lot of memories of his childhood because he lost his father at a very early age. And he said, I want to see my father in the picture. There's no picture of his father. He lost his father when he was 8 years old. There's no picture. There's lots of pictures of his mother because his mother, you know, lived to an old age, but he lost his father at a very young age. And so I think many of you know the story, but anyway, they brought in a person who had some siddhi, was respected in that way as having a certain siddhi where people can describe how the father was and how the father looked, who remembered the father, who knew him. They were old themselves. They described, and he was able to paint, like with pastels, a picture of Swamiji's father. And the other people that had known him recognized him immediately. But yes, this is him. And so when Swamiji saw that picture, the men did a picture also of Swamiji's mother, but we had pictures of, you know, he didn't need to recreate that. We had pictures, and so Swamiji was able, so this man was able to make, you know, a small picture like this, the size picture of Swamiji's father with these pastels, and of the mother, very lifelike. And so then Swamiji was in his, he used to have a little, like, foyer where people would meet with him, and behind was his bedroom. His bedroom was turned into a hospital room. And then Swamiji would look out through the door into this foyer, and as you look through the door, there were the two pictures. So he'd always be looking at these pictures, and anybody that would come in knew, who would say, have you seen these pictures? And he would talk about them, you know. But he said to all of us, this is not private information, Swamiji, this is, have this privacy problem. Yes. he said he is getting just floods of memories when he saw that. That image triggered floods of memories coming back about his, because he lost his father so young, I think he was 8. Floods of memories were coming back about his father and his mother and his childhood experiences. And he was so so moved, so very moved by that, and so grateful for it also, to have those experiences. So you would always kind of talk to us about it, and you would have a lot of that feelings around all of that. It's very beautiful. And so all of that would be something he would often be talking about, but also in terms of the Vedanta, he felt this urgency to tell, to be sure to tell his students everything, everything that might be helpful. So Sharada took some tapes of, you taped almost all of these lectures. They didn't turn out very well because the tape is from a long ways away, and I don't know if we ever got real, there's real ones available where the mic is closed. But he would pick topics, you know, that he felt was so important to one. A lot about antakarana shuddhi, you know, how to be with your emotions, what is important. It talks on compassion, talks on kindness, you know, all of these kind of things, because everything that he felt was of value that would come up in his mind, those would be the talks for the last month or two or more, you know. And so,
in,
oh yes, yeah. You can, after class, you can go and see this. Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. So, why I'm saying all of this is because he was very weak when he said, "Who's going to protect the sampradaya? Who will protect the sampradaya?" So we all protect the sampradaya. And Bhagavan will take care of it. You've done everything you possibly can. Who are the people? Where are the people? Where are the people? We all did that. And so I feel for all of us, we have different callings in terms of how you disperse this knowledge in whatever way that you do, or maybe it's just you keep it to yourself, and your expression is an expression of that knowledge. You can't help it. It's who you are, after all. You know, but whether you express it and only teach in your own language and explain it to others because that's who you are, that's how it's going to be, I still feel that this knowledge of the sampradaya and having that depth as an undergirding that's holding you, that you need to have that. However you end up expressing it or not expressing it, it's just our parag, it's how it's going to be. But you come from this tradition, you know, so we'll honor this tradition as much as completely as we can. That's it. So with this, let's do this first prayer verse. Char, do you want to chant it for us?
Om Vasudevendra Yogindram.
Om Vasudevendra Yogindram.
Natva.
Natva.
Jnana Pradam Gurum.
Jnana Pradam Gurum.
Mukshunam.
Mukshunam.
Hitarthaya.
Tattva bodho.
Vidhiyate.
Let me read this, breaking the sandhi. Vasudeva Indra Yogi Indram. So look at this. In Sanskrit, when we give the little Sanskrit classes that is mandatory for you all to take for a week or so, mandatory, whatever that means, okay? We want you to take it. Mm-hmm. Vasudeva, that ends in a, Vasudeva. Indra is an E, Vasudeva, Indra. But in Sanskrit, when you put a and E together, it takes an A sound. A plus E is replaced by A. So that's why you see there, Vasudevendra, Vasudevendra, Vasudeva, Indra, Vasudevendra. And there's another one, Yogi, Indram, There's an E, puts an E. Yogi Indram, Yogindram. Long E. That's why it has this horizontal line with the E. It's a long E. Sanskrit, some of the simple vowels have two lengths, like the a, e, e, u, r. Those simple vowels have a second, have a length, a second length, two matras. That'll have that horizontal line that you see. It means it has, it's a long vowel. So here you have Vasudevendra, Yogindra, Natwa, Jnana, Pradam. Two words put together, they make a compound. Jnana, Pradam, Guru. Mumukshu Nam, Itta, Artaya, Itartaya, Apasa is a Itartaya, Tatwa, Bodho is Tatwa, Bodhaha. That Visarga becomes O, Tatwa Bodhaha. That Avagraha, that S, is a silent A. Tatwa Bodhaha Abhidiyate. This is called Sandhi. You know, and so you need to kind of get used to it, because Swamiji, when you're looking at the text, you'll see these different, you'll see some letters, and then Swamiji or myself or the teacher will read it, breaking the Sandhi as you go along, and then you say, that's not what's there. Yeah. So they don't teach you, usually if we just read it, we're just breaking the Sandhi so that you can see the actual words. So here, Vasudeva, Indra, Vasudeva, Indra Yog, Vasudevendra, Yogindra, Yatva, Jnanapradam, Gurum, Mumukshu Nam, Hitartaya, Tetrabodha Abhidiyate. Tetrabodha is the name of this book. Tetwa means, sometimes translated as the truth, but if you break it down, this pronoun tut means that. So tetwa, the isness or the being of that. Now that as a pronoun stands for anything. You know, if you use a pronoun, the pronoun can be applied, like the word that can be applied to anything in the universe. It can be the whole universe itself, or it can be any object in the universe, or it can be you, your body, mind, sense, organs. So the tattva means the reality or the truth or the being, the ness of that. What is the truth of that? What is the truth of this universe, the being of this universe, the reality of this universe is of what is, the reality of that, of whatever, and that stands for anything you can think of. Anything you can think of. Any experience, any objectification, any vritti is that. So what is the truth of that? That's the tattva. So tattva bodha, bodha means knowledge. So the knowledge of the tattva, the knowledge of the ultimate reality of all that is, the Tattva Bodha. So that's the name of the book. And so the subject matter of the book is contained in the title. This book is about, the name of this, the nama of this book, gives the subject matter called the Vishaya. It's the subject matter of the book. The subject matter of the book is Tattva Bodha, knowledge of the ultimate reality. Tattva Bodha. This book, Tattva Bodha Abhidiyate, is being taught, is being presented. So Tattva Bodha Abhidiyate is being presented. Mumukshu Nam Itartaya. Mumukshu Nam means for the mumukshus. Of the mumukshus, genitive plural mumukshu nam. This word mumukshu, the mumu, and then the ksha, there's a shu in there. There's a reduplication, mumu, mumukshu. It means the one who desires the verb. The verb of mumukshu is much, becomes mokshu, mumukshu. Much means to be released, to be liberated. So the one who desires moksha, the one who wants, has a desire for moksha, is called a mumukshu. Sometimes you hear the word jignasu. That's from the root nya, jnana, knowledge. Jignyasu, there's a reduplication, jignya, jignyasu, the one who desires or who wants knowledge. So, in fact, we say in the tradition, the one who is a mumukshu, desires, the one who desires liberation, becomes a jignyasu, the one who desires knowledge, once you come to the realization that really the moksha itself is knowledge of the self, because yourself is already liberated. So in fact, there's nothing to do, there's something to know. First you start with, I want to be liberated from this samsara. I want to be liberated from this dukkha, from this suffering. And not liberated just temporarily. We're all, you know, have this 15-second moksha. Temporary relief. We have temporary relief from samsara, from suffering. But in the Shastra, they liken that temporary relief to the situation of a person drowning in the ocean. You know, as the tides flow in and out, the person who's drowning in the ocean, the tides will, as they come out, they'll push him up, you know, and they go, what a relief to be able to breathe, you know. But then the tide goes out again or comes back in and pulls him in, back down under. Then it goes out, pushes him up. And so for a while, you feel really happy when you're up and you're gasping for air and you're so relieved and you're so happy, but only to be pulled back down again. And so there comes a time, wait a minute, I don't want to just be up so that I can breathe for this limited amount of time. I would like to be, somebody save me and take me to the shore. Bring me to the shore so that I can just breathe without worry, without being pulled underneath. That's one of the illustrations that is used. So it's not that we don't know or don't have many experiences, actually, of being just all is well with me. And even a feeling, this is who I am. This is how it's supposed to be. All is well with me. This is perfect. This is me. Why can't I always be like this? Why am I not always like this? Just myself. Just my being. No problems. I'm just myself. I want to always be this way. But I'm not always that way. And then you feel yourself losing that fullness or that wholeness. And you can't, I remember grasping, trying to hold, no, don't go. Please don't go. Don't go. But as I was saying, you know, please don't go, don't go. It's going. It's going, going, gone. Yeah. And so you don't know where it goes. You don't know where it comes from. You don't know where it goes. You don't know how to keep it. You don't know how to get it either. Sometimes, you know, sometimes you fulfill a desire to get that. And so, at least if you feel a desire, normally you get some sort of relief for a few seconds anyway. But there's nothing, you don't know where that comes from, who it is, who owns that, where does it reside, you know. And so that sukha, this anitya sukha, this time-bound sukha, is like the drowning person, you know. You have temporary relief and then you're pulled under into dukkha. And so at some point, you understand that is inevitable in a time-bound creation. Because if your sukha, your pleasure, your state of well-being is dependent upon anything in the world at all, if it's dependent upon anything time-bound, it will be temporal. Because what in this world is not temporal? And so at some point, that becomes realized. I mean, really realized, not just as a passing fancy, but like, oh. Yeah. And at that time, a person becomes a mumukshu. Because you know yourself as being whole and complete. You've all, like Swamiji will call it, that best cup of coffee. And in India, they love, you know, the Madras coffee. They love that Madras coffee. They go to great lengths to make the perfect cup of coffee. Usually the mother makes it every morning out of fresh beans and grinds, roasts the beans, from the raw beans, roasts the beans till perfectly, then grinds the beans, and then makes the fresh coffee out of that. And so there is the best cup of Madras coffee. We know what that is. And everything compares to that. That's, it's almost its own creation, that example. But we also know, we know how we're supposed to be. And what is actually happening there is our mind is just, for the period of time, has a beautiful shanta vritti, that peace, that very deep, peaceful vritti where there's no agitation, there's no want, there's just peace. And you feel so at home. But then that is, that sense of being at home is so dependent on the mind, on the shanta vritti. So we are always trying to get the shanta vritti. You get the shanta vritti, which you don't know this is happening, but and when you have, don't have knowledge, but when you fulfill a desire for a moment, you're desireless, and so everything's fine. The shanta vritti is there, and I'm just at home. I have ananda, that fullness, and I feel very complete with that. But then I have the, I discover that, as the Buddha says, I discover that to be a dukkha yoni. It's just a womb for suffering because of its temporal nature. It's time-bound in nature. And so that sense of comfort of just being myself and recognizing that best cup of coffee, just being myself, I continue to lose it. And at some point, that just simply is not okay, because I should be able to, because I know that's myself. I feel comfortable. I know that me, it's where the your own self is what is dominant in the vritti. Your being is dominates the vritti, not the emotions or the agitations or the extroversion or the desires. The mind is just filled with your own nature without any conflicting experiences. And you feel so much at home. And then at some point, that is what I want, not this temporal. And how do I get that? You become a mumukshu because you realize that you don't, you're not able to get that out of the world. And so I don't have a solution, because the whole world is temporal and everything about your body, mind, sense organs is time-bound. So you can only create momentary experiences with a time-bound world. And when you realize that, then you no longer have the solution. Because what are you going to do? There's nothing you can do. You can just do things within the time-bound world. So you become a mumukshu. So here he says, this tattva-bodha, this knowledge of the reality of the truth, abhidhyate, is being presented hitarthaya for the purpose of, for the sake of, artha, arthaya is in the data, for the purpose of, for the sake of, for the sake of hitam, for the purpose of what is hitam for the mumukshus, what is good for the mumukshus. I am writing this book, or they put it in the present, I'm writing this book, the author is saying, in order to help to give to the mumukshus for the purpose of blessing, of giving what is needed for those who desire liberation. And so this word hitam means what is beneficial, what will bless you right now at this point in this particular situation, what is hitam, you know, what is beneficial, what is necessary, what is helpful. These are all ways of understanding this word hitam. So hitarthaya, for the sake of hitam, for the purpose of this hitam, for what is good, for the sake of blessing, for giving what is necessary, what is most helpful at this time. At what time? The person's a mumukshu now. So now that you've become a mumukshu, what is the most helpful for you? So this knowledge of the truth is being presented for the sake of hitam. What is the best blessing for those who are desirous of liberation? Okay. So that's the second line. Mumukshu nam hitarthaya hita arthaya tattva bodha abhidhyate. Then, in the first line, he says, Vasudeva, Vasudevendra, Yogindra. Vasudevendra is the name of his guru. Yogindra means the one who is the Raja, the king, the lord of all of the yogis. We'll talk about that. Yogindra. Vasudevendra, Yogindra. Netva. Having given, Netva's indeclinable past participle, Iktva. Having pronounced, you know, Namaha. Netva. Nam. Netva comes from the root Nam. It means to pronounce, to bow down, to surrender. So having done my prostrations to my teacher, Vasudevendra, Yogindra. Also, Swamiji says this is, I got this from reading his book, which hopefully you'll all get soon. I might have to make copies of it. What is it? But, you know, Swamiji is Swami Dayananda Saraswati. Ananda is there for Tatravida Ananda Saraswati. You know. So for all of, in our Sampradaya, all of the Swamis have a Saraswati. And at the end of their individual name is the Ananda. There are different, 9 or 10 different orders of sannyasa. I don't remember them all. But they will have their own nomenclature. So in this, for them, some sannyasis, it will be Indra. So Yogendra, the one who is the Indra, the Lord or the Master or the King of all of the yogis. Or Vasudeva Indra, Vasudevendra. Vasudevendra, the one who is the Lord Vasudeva, you know, who is the king, the Lord Vasudeva. And so there that Indra is more of a Karmadari, the Lord who is Vasudeva. Vasudeva, so this is a proper name, but the word Vasu means the one who pervades everything or in whom everything is included. That's Vasu. So Ishwara. Brahman, which is Ishwara, everything is included, everything exists, is pervaded by and exists in Brahman, in the self, which is Brahman. That's Vasu. Deva is the one who is self-evident, self-conscious, it's consciousness. The one who shines, it comes from the root div, to shine. So the one who shines, the one who is swaprakasha, the one who is self-effulgent. So the one who is pure consciousness and who pervades, contains everything. There's nothing away. The one, this, as the various, the Adhishtana means the one who's the truth of everything. So Vasudeva is the one who's conscious being who pervades everything, in whom everything is. So Vasudeva Indra is the name that Indra really is put on there because he belongs to the Kanchimata. That's the Shankaracharyas, all belong, you know, there are 4 different mutts for the Shankaracharyas. Kanchi is one mutt that, in which those group of Shankaracharyas are related to. So in this area, Kanchi, there's a mutt for the Shankara, where there's the lineage from down from Shankara, and they take this word Indra, where we take Ananda, like that. So, Vasudeva Indra, Saraswati. Vasudevendra, then Yogendra, and that my guru named Vasudeva, Vasudevendra, he is Yogendra. He is the Lord, the King of all of the yogis. Because the word yogi comes from the root yuj, to unite. And so we talk about what is the ultimate uniting is the recognition that I am that. That's the ultimate. There's not 2 things uniting. There's the recognition that I am what I want to be. So that is the king of all of the yogis, is the one who has recognized that instead of uniting, the word uniting, which means bringing 2 together, it has to do with the identity. Instead of the uniting between things, bringing 2 things together, it's recognizing that identity which you had taken before to be 2. So that uniting is a recognition of the identity. That in fact my deepest self means the pratyagatma. As we as we start objectifying our body and our mind and sense organs have this subject-object relationship, we are left with myself that can't be objectified anymore. That's that modest innermost self. That this innermost self that is not subject to being objectified, but it's kind of the bottom line. There's not any further I can go. There's not a consciousness beyond consciousness. Consciousness, be aware of consciousness, but there's nothing in between the consciousness and the consciousness. That's the farthest I can go. And so that conscious being is the self in all beings. Because, and that's what in the whole Tattva Bodha, this whole thing ends up there, that this conscious being that I am is the self of all beings. And in fact, this whole creation has for its adhishtana, is pervaded by me, has me for itself. There's a lot of teaching in that we'll see as we go through this. But now, this, just giving you kind of the etymology of the word, says, having pranam to my teacher, Vasudevendra, Yogendra, the one who has this knowledge, having pranam to him, that one who is, these are all accusative singulars, jnana pradam, the one who is a giver of knowledge, but it's just not jnana dam. Jnana means knowledge. Jnana pradam means the one who gives knowledge properly. He gives it well. He gives it according to this upasarga, it's called this preposition, means that the way that this knowledge is given is according to the tradition. It's following the pramana. He's wielding it as a pramana. Pradam, he's giving this knowledge properly. So jnana pradam gurum. Having bowed to my teacher who wields this knowledge as it is to be wielded, jnana pradam, whose name is Vasudevendra Yogendra, Lord of the Yogis. So having bowed to him, I am writing this Tattva Bodha. This Tattva Bodha Namata is being presented, is being written by me for the clear understanding, you can say, hitta artha, to make it available in a way that blesses all of the mokshas. So that's his prayer verse. So now, in this verse, there are four factors that are necessary for you to understand if you're going to pursue a particular knowledge. You have to be an adhikari for that knowledge. You have to be qualified. You have to be a qualified student. Here the qualified student would be what? The one who desires liberation. That is the mumukshu. It's the mumukshu who is the qualified student. In the Brahma Sutra, in the Adhyasa Bhasha, in the Atato Brahma Jignyasa, the first sutra of the Brahma Sutras, which is kind of the last text you study, they say, the question is, who is the adhikari? Who is the qualified student? Is it just the brahmanas? All these are discussed. Is it only the brahmanas? Because only the brahmanas, they're the teachers of the Vedas, they're the priests of the Vedas. Is it only meant for the brahmanas? Is it meant for the brahmanas and the kshatriyas? No. Is it meant only for men? What about the streets? What about the women? What about the balas? What about the children? What about the mlechas? The foreigners, you know, all these people, like the women and the children, you know, the children, the foreigners, the people that are outside of the Vedic container. What about all those people? You know, because they can't do, they're not allowed to do certain rituals, and only the brahmanas have certain chants, the kshatriyas have certain chants. The women don't have those, now they do. Now they do. Swamiji brought them in, included us. What are the restrictions? Who is allowed to be a mumukshu? Who gets to be a mumukshu? Well, mumukshu means the one who desires liberation. So the one who desires a liberation is the mumukshu. And the mumukshu is the one who is qualified for the study, for this tattva bodha, the one who wants it. Hardly anybody wants it. So that itself is quite a limiting factor. You know, who wants to be liberated? Liberation means getting my new car or getting a raise or, you know, moving to a new place where I've always wanted to live or doing this or doing that. That's my moksha. No, so the moksha, that ultimate moksha, not the moksha of a temporary gain, but the desire for liberation, which is the desire for myself, the desire for that ultimate freedom from suffering, the desire to be totally, to recognize myself, who I actually am, what is going on in this universe. So the freedom from samsara, you know, freedom from suffering, freedom from samsara, freedom from suffering. That is the mumukshu, and that is the person who is the adhikari, right? So the qualified student is the adhikari, is one of the four factors. The other thing, you need to desire something to study it. Imagine studying something that you have no interest in. You have to be an adhikari. Then you have to know what the subject matter is. You're an adhikari and somebody's teaching about car mechanics. Well, that's not what I'm interested in. I'm interested in self-knowledge, of knowing myself, of freedom from suffering. So then the tattva bodhaha, this knowledge, the absolute truth, the knowledge of the reality, of what is true, that is what's called the vishaya. And so then, so those are two things. Then you have to know, well, if I study this, it has to do with the knowledge of the reality, knowledge of the truth, what do I get out of it? Moksha. So he says, mumukshu nam. This tattva bodha is what is needed for the mumukshus. Right? What is needed for the mumukshus is moksha. So this moksha is the pala, is what we get from this study. So there's three things. The next thing, the last thing, is what is the sambandha, what is the relationship between this tattva bodha and the moksha? What's the connection between the two? Because like, say you want to learn cooking, you study the art of cooking, you study the cookbook and all of that, but nothing happens until you cook. Then you have to go off and cook to create the thing. You learn how to cook and how to do all of these things, and you understand the recipe, so then you have to go and do it, right? So here, if I study this text, then what do I have to go do once I study the text so that I can gain that moksha? And so here, that sambandha, you know, the sambandha that will continue, which we'll see here, I'll give it to some degree here, the sambandha between the tattva bodha, which is the hita, which is beneficial for the mumukshus. What is the sambandha between the teaching itself and moksha? And the sambandha here is that the teaching itself is moksha, because yourself is already free. If yourself, who you actually are, is already free, there's nothing that you can do about that. It's already a given. So the problem is not that you need to become free, to do something, to change something, to tweak yourself in some way or another, or have a meditative blending in with some big capital S self. No, the self that you are is the self that you want to be, but because of ajnana, because of beginningless ignorance, the mind projects that self out into the world without recognizing at all your own being. And so this teaching methodology called this pramana, this teaching methodology, is something that takes you step by step by step to that recognition of the immediate, direct recognition of your own being. So the sambandha is the teaching itself, the text itself. That teaching itself is the moksha. So what is the relationship between the teaching and moksha? The teaching is moksha. Knowledge is liberation. There's nothing more to do. You gain this knowledge and then, okay, now I'm completely free. What should I do? But no, knowledge itself is the freedom. Antakarna Shuddhi is something else. We'll talk about that as I've been talking. That has to do with, in the first place, gaining a mind that has enough shanti to gain this knowledge. because say the knowledge takes place through words, but your mind is all over the place, and so you keep coming back for glimpses of the words, then you're gone again, come back, gone again, come back. Or you're distracted by your desires. The mind doesn't have that relaxation to just end the desire. The desire goes a long ways in us, the desire for moksha, and that shraddha, that this teaching will give me that. And that desire is there. That gives tremendous shanti and samadhanam, an ability to just focus and be with that teaching. You know? So this antakarana shuddhi is necessary to a certain degree to even be a mumukshu. So we all really come here with enough antakarana shuddhi to gain this knowledge. With a little help from our friends like Swamiji with his jokes. Mm-hmm. Even Swami Vagishananda was wonderful jokes. You know, but those jokes are so important. You know, you laugh and your mind is just free for the moment, and then you just shovel in the knowledge into that free mind. You know? Yeah, so Swami Vagishana is a wonderful, wonderful joke teller. And ever since I've known him, since he was like 19 years old, he's been and always to make a joke. You can create them out of the air. Puja Swamiji is the same way. I used to ask him, Swamiji, where did you get all these jokes? Where did they come from, Swamiji? He would just laugh, and at different times he would say, well, I made them up as I go along. Mm-hmm. He said, I could have been a comedian. But the jokes, you know, the jokes are such a blessing that we even have, that they even exist. Because they just open you up. Mm-hmm. They just relax you. You know, they just fill you with joy and with laughter, you know. And then in that disposition, you know, as long as that joke lasts, and, you know, throw this in. Mm-hmm. And your mind's ready to receive it, you know. But then after some time and some effort, we do the sadhanas that are necessary to help the tremendous strength of this knowledge in terms of purifying your mind. In fact, jnana is considered the greatest purifier. There's nothing equal to it, you know. But then there's things that we can do that can really, really help it along and relieve some of the stress, especially unconscious things. So we learn all of that now. Swamiji used to deal a lot with the unconscious once he understood our predicament of this modern era. He understood, and then he did a lot of meditations. Many of the meditations that I do are meditations that he has done. No. That are demon taking care of this unconscious. So anyway, these fourfold connecting links between you and the subject matter is called the anubandha. Anubandha means a connecting, something that connects you to something else. Bandha, it binds you to it, connects you to it. So here it's called technically anubandha chatushtaya. This group of four connecting links, the four connecting links that connect me to the study. Why do you want to study it? Well, you're a mumukshu. It's one reason. Because this tattva bodha, you have some shraddha that the Upanishads, you know, are can give it to you, as you understand what the Upanishads are meant to give. The Upanishads are meant to give moksha. You understand what these words mean. So you understand the subject matter, the vishaya. So there's the adhikari, qualified student, the vishaya, the subject matter, and then there's the sambandha, the connection between the text or the subject matter and moksha and liberation. Do you study and really master the text and then go do something? No, not in this case. It's not like cooking. In this case, it's the text, the knowledge itself that is being given, is that understanding, that knowledge itself, is the liberation. That's the sambandha. What is the pala? What is the result? Liberation. So the sambandha between the liberation and the tattva-bodha, the moksha and the tattva-bodha, this text, what is the sambandha? How are these two connected? That's what we call the sambandha. The connection is moksha. It's called Pratipadika. Pratipadika means that which reveals the thing that is to be revealed. It's the revealer of what needs to be revealed. So this text, Tatvabodha, is the revealer of what needs to be revealed with moksha. That's the connection between the two. Right? So these Anubandha Chatushtya, these four, Adhikari, subject matter, Vishya. So the Adhikari is the qualified student. The Vishya is the subject matter. Right? Then the Pala is the result. And the Sambandha is the relationship between the subject matter and the result, which is this revealer-revealed relationship. So, let's chant this verse again.
Om Vasudevendra Yogindram. Natva
Jnana Pradam Gurum
Jnana Pradam Gurum
Mumukshunam
Hitarthaya Hitarthaya
Tatva Bodha
Tatva Bodha
Abhidhyate
Abhidhyate.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti 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 Harihi. Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi. Om.